In the summer of 1985, the small coal mining town of Centralia, Pennsylvania, was bustling with activity. The place was swarmed with truck drivers, government officials, and lawyers, all there to help with a giant crisis. A dangerous fire was raging underground.
But these people weren't there to extinguish the blaze. Rather, they were there to help with the town's mass evacuation plan. Within a few short years, Centralia would become nothing more than a ghost town.
Nearly all the residents of Centralia had packed and cleared out their homes, loading their belongings onto moving trucks. After they left, no one would step foot in the houses that had been in their families for generations.
As the departing residents left Centralia, small white plumes of steam escaped from cracks in the street. It was the final reminder of the ecological disaster that had forced their exodus.
In their wake, only a handful of townspeople remained. They'd turned down every offer by the state. To them, Centralia was home. No amount of money or danger was going to change that.
In fact, some of these people didn't believe the blaze was dangerous at all. Instead, they thought their hometown had fallen victim to something far more sinister and complex than a mine fire.
They believed a conspiracy had formed against them, and staying in Centralia was the only way to fight it. Someone was trying to push them out to steal their precious coal.
Welcome to Conspiracy Theories, a Spotify original from Parcast. Every Monday and Wednesday, we dig into the complicated stories behind the world's most controversial events and search for the truth. I'm Carter Roy.
And I'm Molly Brandenburg.
And neither of us are conspiracy theorists.
But we are open-minded, skeptical, and curious. Don't get us wrong. Sometimes the official version is the truth.
But sometimes it's not.
You can find episodes of Conspiracy Theories and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify.
This is our second episode on Pennsylvania's Centralia Mine Fire, a devastating blaze that wiped out a once thriving coal town. The fire has been burning under Centralia for 59 years and still rages today. But there's no clear answer on how the fire started or why authorities failed to extinguish it.
Last time, we covered the history of Centralia, Pennsylvania. We heard about the conflict and violence in the local coaling industry, the decline of mining in the region, and how the fire led to permanent evacuations.
This episode, we'll dive into three theories surrounding the Centralia fire. Some believe it was a corporate conspiracy to steal the town's coal. Others say the fire started decades earlier and survived in the underground mines until it was discovered in 1962. And there's a few people who believe the town's own bureaucratic incompetence is to blame.
We have all that and more coming up. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Bottling everything up can be really bad for you in the long run and have some terrible consequences. And this isn't a conspiracy theory. The more you let things build up, the more of a toll it can take on your mental health. I know for me, in dealing with some traumatic events in my life, I had the tendency to think, well, they've already happened, I'm okay, other people have it worse, it doesn't matter much. And through therapy, I was really able to understand how those events impacted me and changed how I'd started to see the world in ways that weren't great and were sometimes making my life worse. So therapy or dealing with any traumatic events you've had might really help you in terms of how you can live in the present moment now. So if you want to give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's entirely online, convenient, and flexible. It's also really easy to get started. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/conspiracy today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/conspiracy. This episode is brought to you by Terminix. There's one thing we can all agree on. Dealing with pests is a pain. But luckily, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. So if your home or business has pests, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Underneath the deep, dark hills of eastern Pennsylvania, there's a fire that's been raging continuously for almost 60 years.
At the height of its existence around 1900, the town above it, Centralia, had a population of nearly 3,000 people. It was considered the capital of anthracite coal mining in the region.
Today, that population has dipped to around 9 people. Centralia is essentially a ghost town.
Now, the only people visiting the town are the occasional disaster tourists. They come to Centralia to gawk at the abandoned buildings, the cracked and overgrown sidewalks, and the roads caked with graffiti. It's an apocalyptic landscape and a cautionary tale of what can happen when nature overpowers man.
According to the official story, the fire started when the town council tried to shrink the landfill just before the Memorial Day parade in 1962. Yet, despite their best efforts, the flames spread into the abandoned mines, growing out of control.
But some of the people in Centralia don't believe the fire was an accident at all. They believe it was part of a much bigger plan.
This brings us to conspiracy theory number one. That the mining companies, along with the United States government, actually started the fire beneath Centralia. This was all in an effort to retrieve the rest of its valuable coal.
In order to grasp the motivations behind this theory, let's travel back to the late 1940s, just after the Second World War. Pennsylvania's coal mining industry was in dire shape. The value of coal was decreasing significantly as oil became America's prominent fuel source.
The mining companies that continued to operate in Pennsylvania were much smaller and less profitable than they had been during coal's golden age at the beginning of the 20th century.
Those who lived in the local mining towns, like Centralia, still took pride in the industry they were built upon. Even as its value dwindled, they still believed their product was vital to the nation's economy. It would eventually see a resurgence.
But coal was no longer the energy tycoon it had once been. And as more and more companies started to abandon their mines, an onslaught of environmental problems began to surface.
Especially around Centralia. There, the inactive mines greatly outnumbered those in operation. The abandoned tunnels may not have had any workers, but they were still owned by the mining companies, and they were still full of perfectly good coal.
As a result, the mines became vulnerable to bootleg miners, who stole the resource and sold it on the black market. It did help the locals make ends meet, especially when work was scarce, but all the unregulated mining caused instability within those shafts. Left unchecked, it led to tunnel collapses and deadly sinkholes.
During the 1950s, there were also dozens of active fires in Pennsylvania's anthracite coal mining region, and most of them happened at those abandoned mines. Since the corporations were no longer using them, they claimed the fires weren't their responsibility.
Some of the companies turned to the state, saying they didn't have the money to put the fires out, even if they wanted to. As it was kicked down the field, the problem eventually fell in the lap of the federal government, who was forced to pick up the tab.
By 1952, the federal government had spent over $1.3 million fighting Pennsylvania's mine fires. That's around $13 million in today's money. Almost half of that was spent on just five anthracite coal mines alone.
According to Joan Quigley, a journalist who wrote the book The Day the Earth Caved In, the federal government grew tired of spending taxpayer money fighting the fires, especially when they were owned by private companies. Representatives in Congress searched for ways to put the financial responsibility back on the mine companies.
But the coal companies balked at the idea of paying for the upkeep of mines they didn't use. So they offered a different solution. Rather than take responsibility for the mines, they'd sell the rights to the coal to the townspeople themselves. This way, the companies technically still owned the mines, just not the coal inside. It was a tremendous legal loophole that helped them avoid paying to extinguish the fires.
The Coates Coal Company, one of the last operations still running in Centralia at the time, did just this. It strategically sold the coal rights back to the town for a single U.S. dollar.
According to journalist David DeCook, the Centralians likely saw this as a great opportunity to take back control of their own land. Maybe they could even make a profit by leasing the rights out to other mining companies.
Reportedly, Centralia was the only town in the state to take a company up on this offer.
Some say that within a few years of making this deal, the mining companies realized they were wrong about Centralia. There was still money to be made there, meaning they wanted to regain access to that coal.
But by the time the companies came to this conclusion, Centralia's town council had already passed an ordinance prohibiting deep mining within the town itself. So if any mining companies wanted the coal, they either needed to lobby the town to repeal the ordinance, pay them off, or make the town go away.
It was unclear how much coal actually remained underneath Centralia. According to a spokesman from the United States Office of Surface Mining, in 1981, Centralia was fully mined out. In fact, it had been for decades, long before the sale of the coal rights, which would explain why the people of Centralia commuted to other towns for work.
But this wasn't enough to convince some residents of Centralia. They were certain a conspiracy was brewing. They had heard that there was approximately $25 million worth of coal, mostly in the single seam, running directly beneath their feet. This underground gold mine was named the Mammoth Vein.
This $25 million rumor was reported in May 1974 by a local newspaper. The problem was, no one knows how the reporter came to this conclusion. The number has never been confirmed or reported by an official source.
It's certainly suspicious, but in that same article, the reporter found something even more shocking. Allegedly, the state of Pennsylvania was already looking into relocating the people of Centralia, perhaps an indication that the town was already beyond saving.
Even if there was a huge amount of anthracite coal beneath Centralia, the resource no longer held its same economic value. But for some reason, the people of Centralia continued to believe they were sitting on a gold mine, and the mining companies were willing to start a deadly fire to get to it.
The paranoia grew worse as the mine fire raged. By the late 1970s, this theory was discussed regularly at Centralia's town council meetings. It offered an explanation for why the fire started and why the government failed to extinguish it. Some even accused city council members of being conspirators themselves.
In March 1981, Centralia resident Helen Womer took the stage at a town meeting and laid out her own theory of the fire. It wasn't just the coal companies who wanted to push the people out and take the coal. She argued it was the federal government, too. Her biggest piece of evidence was the strange way Centralia's fire was handled compared to other mine blazes in the area.
Around 1950, a similar mine fire broke out in the neighboring town of Mount Carmel. Like Centralia, their fire proved difficult to extinguish and raged for years. But unlike Centralia, the state of Pennsylvania didn't give up on Mount Carmel, and they never relocated its residents.
It took 17 years, but in 1967, the government eventually dug a massive trench to excavate and extinguish the Mount Carmel fire for good. Thanks to their efforts, small-scale coal mining continues in Mount Carmel to this day.
Helen and other Centralians argued that the success at Mount Carmel proved the government could have extinguished the fire if they really wanted to. But for some reason, the authorities let it burn.
According to journalist Joan Quigley, the difference in the minds of these Centralians was that the town of Mount Carmel didn't own the rights to their coal. The mining companies still did, which may be why the corporations, and maybe even the government, prioritized the fire in Mount Carmel.
In August of 1962, less than 3 months after the fire began, a local strip miner offered to excavate the fire himself.
He said he'd dig trenches, just like they had in Mount Carmel. He even offered to do the job for almost no money. All he wanted in exchange was to keep the coal he dug up in the process. It seemed like a win-win.
And yet, the officials rejected his offer. They claimed there was no need for his help because the state would fund the firefighting effort. But that never really happened. Instead, the government's focus turned to relocation.
Years later, after the state failed to extinguish the fire, Centralians remembered the rejection of the miners' plan with suspicion. They saw it as more evidence that the government didn't want to extinguish the fire.
They wanted to keep it going, so they could wipe Centralia off the map entirely.
Coming up, we'll determine whether Centralia faced a corporate conspiracy or suffered from small-town paranoia.
Robbing trains, rustling cattle. Pop culture usually depicts the Old West as an uncharted land with no rules. But how much of that is true? Now you can find the facts, learn the lore, and tackle the tallest of tales in the Spotify original from Parcast, Wild Wild West. Every Thursday on Spotify, saddle up to the saloon to hear about the American frontier's most ruthless outlaws and heroic gunslingers. Wild Wild West features a compilation of episodes from shows across Parcast Network and focuses on the legends that help shape American culture. From sharpshooters and explorers to family feuds and lost treasure, the West has a history more complex than you know. Don't be a yellow belly. Follow Wild Wild West free and only on Spotify. This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life, at least not the ones you're thinking of, but they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home, like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of bug it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. And with over 95 years of experience, it's no wonder they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com.
Now, back to the story.
For decades, many residents of Centralia believed the mining companies, along with their own government, had conspired against them. They thought the fire was a planned operation to force them from their homes so corporations could take back the coal.
After all, there was a long history of the government intervening in the mining industry. Only a few generations before, President Teddy Roosevelt had stepped in to help negotiate between strikers and the mining companies. At this point in time, America relied on that coal, and he wanted to help expedite the process.
This anti-authority suspicion ran deep through the veins of many Centralians. Many of the citizens were direct descendants of the Molly Maguires. If you remember from part one, the Maguires battled both the coal companies and the police during the labor strikes of the 19th century.
Just like those striking miners, Centralia resident Helen Womer was skeptical of what the authorities had told her. She believed the dangers behind this mine fire had been greatly exaggerated. She disagreed that there were lethal gases seeping through the neighborhood and thought the complaints about it had been overblown. Since Helen was directly affected herself, she felt it was a tactic to scare people out of Centralia.
But after making this point at a town council meeting, Helen lost a lot of support. Centralians could see the gases with their own eyes. They felt the effects of carbon monoxide in their homes. Even if the coal companies or the government were behind the fire, it didn't change the gravity of the situation. Their health was at risk.
A month prior, a local boy nearly died after falling into a sinkhole that was caused by the blaze. It was a sobering reality check for most of Centralia's residents. They knew they couldn't stay. So when the government approved a $42 million relocation plan in 1983, the majority of Centralians accepted the money and left for good.
In 1992, the state of Pennsylvania made another attempt to get the last few residents, like Helen Womer, out of Centralia. This time, they used the power of eminent domain. This gave the government permission to buy private land and convert it for public use without the owner's approval.
The state of Pennsylvania tried to seize the remaining houses in Centralia and had plans to demolish them. Allegedly, these abandoned buildings could explode from the fire if they weren't being properly looked after. They were powder kegs just waiting to combust.
The other remaining residents challenged the state in court. They claimed that eminent domain was another layer to the conspiracy, another step to ousting the townspeople and taking the millions worth of coal.
It took 21 years, but eventually this fight did pay off. The Centralians weren't able to prove to the judge that there was some large conspiracy at play, but they did earn the right to remain in their homes for the rest of their days.
Helen Womer and her family took the state up on this offer. She stayed in the same house until her death in 2001 at the age of 73. Whether her death was related to the effects of the fire is unclear, but we do know that her daughter lived in the house until she finally moved in 2016. After that, the Womer family home became property of the state.
In 2002, several years after the mass relocation, the U.S. Postal Service discontinued Centralia's zip code. There weren't enough residents to justify having its own post office or postal route.
For the few remaining residents, the conspiracy remained valid. As far as they were concerned, losing their postal code was just another attempt by the government to wipe them off the map.
I understand the paranoia and how disheartening it was to lose the identity of their town, but there's no proof to suggest there's an abundance of coal left beneath Centralia. In fact, the state of Pennsylvania claims that the 25 million figure was an estimate of how many tons of coal were in Centralia before the mining began in the 19th century. And, according to a 2012 study done by Pennsylvania's Bureau of Abandoned Mine Reclamation, the coal that is left underneath Centralia is unrecoverable and, effectively, worthless. There's barely any reason for a corporation or the government to go through so much trouble to get it back. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most believable, I give this theory a 3.
But you can't deny that some of these companies have resorted to underhanded tactics in the past. As we saw in part 1, during the labor strikes of the 19th century, miners were regularly sabotaged, attacked, and even killed, just so the companies could get their way. I can't rule out that this fire was just another violent tactic by the corporations. Not to mention, the sources claiming that the coal is worthless are the same forces that may be involved in this conspiracy. The mine companies and the government are the ones controlling their narrative. I give this theory a 4.
I think it's more plausible that the companies didn't start the fire, but instead failed to stop it. Some believe the Centralia mine blaze originated further back in time, maybe even decades before.
This brings us to conspiracy theory number two. The Centralia fire actually began long before Memorial Day in 1962. It may have started in the 1930s, and the companies turned a blind eye as it raged through the decades.
At the beginning of the 1930s, the Bast Colliery Mine, located just outside the town's borders, was one of the few in the Centralia Valley still operating. It was owned by the Philadelphia and Reading Coal and Iron Company, which, unlike other mining businesses, remained stable initially at the start of the Great Depression. But that changed around 1932.
According to Raymond J. Milius, who grew up near Centralia, the disaster was rumored to be caused by a single miner. Allegedly, the worker had taken a shift break to light up a cigarette. To make matters worse, the miner tossed the still-lit butt on the floor of the tunnel once his break was over.
Within a few minutes, the embers from the cigarette spread, leading to a massive explosion.
The fire burned through the entire tunnel owned by the Bass Colliery. The miners inside scrambled for the exits as ash and smoke filled the mine system.
The story of how the fire started could very well be a rumor. There's no proof to suggest this was what happened, but the explosion and the fire were well documented. The Philadelphia and Reading Company flooded the tunnel to extinguish the blaze. Then they caved in the entry points, sealing it shut to prevent further spread.
But flooding and sealing a tunnel are not always enough to stop the flames. It sometimes requires additional excavation to find every last part of the fire and make sure it's out. This process can take months, sometimes even years, and it can cost millions.
Allegedly, after taking these few steps, though, the Philadelphia and Reading companies stopped dealing with the fire, likely because they were on the verge of going out of business.
According to reporter David DeCook, the Philadelphia and Reading Company was concerned about its economic shape even before the explosion happened. They didn't have the resources or the manpower to continue fighting the fire, let alone reopen the mine, which means they may have known that the fire wasn't fully extinguished and that it had the potential to devastate other neighboring towns like Centralia.
In fact, there's plenty of Centralia residents that believe the Bast Colliery blaze never went out. Former resident Mark Sawicki thinks that the fire could have survived those initial attempts and continued raging beneath the earth unnoticed, or maybe ignored, for decades. That is, until it reached the Centralia landfill in 1962.
Theoretically, this is possible. The fire could have been fueled by the continuous veins of coal and fed by the oxygen that was filtering through the mine's small cracks. Sawicki's father, a coal miner, claimed that 30 years after the explosion, he could still see glowing embers in the ground directly above the old Bass Colliery.
This theory has its detractors, though. According to journalist Joan Quigley, the Bast Colliery theory was investigated by experts and discredited. Although she doesn't cite who these experts were, she claims they found a large gap in the coal vein between the Bast tunnels and the Centralia landfill. Nothing connects the two locations but dirt, making it near impossible for a fire to travel between them. Subsequently, many view this theory as nothing more than a legend.
Unlike the first theory we covered, this idea, that the fire predated Memorial Day 1962, doesn't require a secret relationship between government officials and mine company saboteurs. If this was how the blaze began, it was a result of corporate negligence. Even if the Philadelphia and Reading Company didn't have the money to fight the fire over the years, they still seemed to turn a blind eye to it.
I see what you mean. In 1932, the long-term safety and environmental effects of a fire like this hadn't been conceived of. Letting a fire on the outskirts of town burn probably seemed harmless. But when we think about the geography of how the fire would get from Bass to Centralia, I'm not sure it tracks. As Joan Quigley found, there were no passageways for the fire to travel between the two mines. In my opinion, this puts the theory to bed. I give this theory a 2 out of 10.
But there's a twist. Underground fires have been known to spread in other ways. Fire ecologist Robert Gray claims that when the conditions are right, subterranean fires can spread through tree roots and buried logs. So I can't totally rule this theory out based solely on Quigley's observation. I have to give this theory a 4 out of 10.
It's impossible to totally rule out environmental factors or corporate negligence. But it's very possible that the truth of the fire's origin is much simpler and more tragic.
Coming up, the town council's incompetence may have led to Centralia's mass exodus.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, back to the story.
The debate on what sparked the Centralia mine fire rages on to this day. So far, we've covered the likelihood of an intentional blaze, or that it spread from the old fire in the Bast Colliery mine, both of which seem low. But we do have to take into consideration how many other ways this fire could have sparked. In a landfill like Centralia's, fires could ignite due to old cigarettes, faulty gas lines, or even hot weather. And when a city doesn't follow the protocol for prevention, a blaze can quickly get out of hand.
This brings us to conspiracy theory number 3. The fire started accidentally, but spread to the town's mines because of the city council's own incompetence.
Landfill fires are common everywhere, but Centralia and other mining towns were especially susceptible, mostly because the residents still used anthracite coal, not gas, to heat their homes. And when they were finished, they dumped the leftover hot ash into their local landfills. According to Joan Quigley's interviewees, this made the dumps a powder keg, leading to small fires on a regular basis.
Because of this inherent fire danger, the state of Pennsylvania had strict regulations for any landfills that were built in that region. Towns like Centralia were required to plug all the holes in the floors and walls of the new dump with a fireproof material. This was to prevent a fire from reaching the mines below ground.
Whether it was purposeful neglect, an attempt to save money, or just an oversight, Centralia's town council missed one giant spot when they built their new landfill, a 15-foot-wide hole which acted as a giant passage to the mines below it.
And somehow, Pennsylvania state inspectors approving the landfill also missed it. An odd coincidence.
There was another key regulation the town either missed or ignored. At the end of every day, they were required to cover the new trash with clay. This created a non-flammable barrier between each new layer of trash. This way, if a fire did spark, it couldn't descend lower into the landfill.
But eventually, town officials admitted that adding clay daily was too expensive. According to Quigley's research, they only did the job when they could afford it. This choice to save money and ignore safety regulations set the stage for the town's own imminent demise.
As we mentioned in part 1, On the day before Memorial Day in 1962, the town tried to clean up the landfill to make it less of an eyesore for their annual parade. According to David DeCook, they lit a small blaze in the garbage pile to shrink the trash, which inevitably led to the still-raging Centralia fire.
Although some say the fire may have started a different way. A truck driver working for the town may have dumped a load of ash from a coal stove into the landfill that afternoon. It was still hot and ready to ignite.
Dumping material like this wasn't illegal. In fact, it was a pretty regular occurrence. As long as the landfill was safely constructed with clay barriers, the small embers wouldn't be able to spread.
The problem was, Centralia's landfill wasn't safely constructed, and the town knew it. They just didn't take responsibility for it.
According to this version of the story, when the firefighters arrived that day, they discovered a blaze already in progress. They tried to put it out by moving some of the trash around with a bulldozer. They even left that night, believing the job was done.
But that clearly wasn't the case. A Centralia resident and mine engineer saw the steam escaping from the landfill. He knew the fire was still active and went through official state channels to alert the town council. Again, there was little, if any, action taken.
If the state found out that the fire was caused by their own incompetence, the town could be penalized for skirting landfill regulations. The only way to divert blame was to lie. The borough council apparently assured the regional investigator that the fire had been taken care of. Meanwhile, they tried to extinguish the blaze themselves as quietly and inexpensively as possible.
But they failed. By July 1962, the fire still hadn't gone out. When the town council realized that they couldn't sit on the issue any longer, they finally wrote to the Pennsylvania government, as well as the coal company that owned the mine, for help. When state officials arrived and investigated the fire, they realized it had already hit a large vein of coal deep beneath the surface. This was no longer a small fire. This was a disaster.
Even then, Centralia's town council didn't admit the truth about how the blaze began. Instead of admitting that one of their city's employees had set fires at the dump, they blamed it on spontaneous combustion. They also claimed that the fire started in June, weeks after it actually did.
Local residents still didn't know who to trust. Likely under the pressure of the town council, most of the blame fell to the government and the coal companies. In fact, the council's own failures didn't become clear until decades later, long after the town ceased to exist.
Ultimately, by trying to conceal its own failure, the city wasted what little time they had to extinguish the fire. If they'd been honest with the state of Pennsylvania initially, they may have been able to halt the fire's progress. In fact, had they taken responsibility, it's possible the town of Centralia may still exist today.
This theory makes the most sense to me, and it has the most documented proof. According to Joan Quigley's research, the town didn't comply with safety regulations around the landfill, and the town council obfuscated the matter, specifically by blaming it on spontaneous combustion and then falsely saying it was extinguished. It makes sense why the town would want to keep the fire's origins a secret. They didn't want anyone to know they failed to follow regulations. I'd give this theory a 9 out of 10.
I agree. Although it's hard to say whether the town council knowingly covered it up or whether they just didn't have the means to take care of the matter. As we've learned, putting out a fire is expensive. Even the federal government got sick of shelling out the cash. It's possible the town was just using their time to try and secure the proper resources. But I do think they could have done more to seek more financial help to save their own town. I'll give this a 7 out of 10.
Despite the varying theories on the origin of the Centralia mine fire, the outcome remains the same. The tunnels beneath Centralia turned into a furnace, rendering the once thriving town uninhabitable.
As of early 2019, only 9 full-time residents lived in Centralia. The town council still exists, at least on paper. And ironically, there's still one operating fire station in town.
Otherwise, there's little left in Centralia, which makes it nearly impossible to ignore the one factor that's outlived everything else. The fire still burning deep beneath the ghost town's surface.
Thanks again for tuning in to Conspiracy Theories. For more information on the Centralia Mine Fire, amongst the many sources we used, we found The Day the Earth Caved In, an American Mining Tragedy by Joan Quigley, extremely helpful to our research.
You can find all episodes of Conspiracy Theories and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify.
Until then, remember, the truth isn't always the best story.
And the official story isn't always the truth.
Conspiracy Theories is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Dick Schroeder, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Trent Williamson, Carly Madden, and Bruce Katovich. This episode of Conspiracy Theories was written by Ryan Lee, with writing assistance by Lori Gottlieb and Mackenzie Moore. Fact-checking by Anya Bearley, and research by Bradley Klein. Conspiracy Theories stars Molly Brennenberg and Carter Roy.
Hey, partners, it's Carter from Parcast. You've probably heard stories about outlaw Jesse James, sharpshooter Annie Oakley, and the horrors of the Donner Party. But how much of what you've heard is actually true? Find out on my new series, Wild Wild West, where I head out on the frontier to find the facts, learn the lore, and tackle the tallest of tales. Follow the Spotify original from Parcast, Wild Wild West, every Thursday, free, and only on Spotify.